Gentus presents The Quiet People by Paul Cleave, narrated by Chris Dyer. Dedication. To my neighbours, who, I learned, for years have heard me singing when I'm in the shower, I am truly sorry. Prologue. Lucas Pittman has to hurry. They have already been here, asking their questions, the two detectives, the woman with the muscly arms, and the man who wore a nice suit that, if Lucas worked and saved for the next 10 years, he still wouldn't be able to afford. Of course, that math is based on prison wages, where it used to take him a day of cleaning blood and shit off bathroom floors to scrape together only a dollar. He won't go back to prison. He can't. And he doesn't have to, if he's quick. The room under the house is marginally bigger than a prison cell. It has 4 cinder block walls and a concrete floor and a single, well-hidden door. The police searched his house and never found it. And isn't that the point of a hidden room? To stay hidden? His dad sure as hell thought so. And if it weren't for the fact his father would sometimes chain him to the bed down there, along with others, even Lucas would never have known it existed. Even so, if the police are coming, and they do manage to find the room, finding it empty is a hell of a lot different from finding it with a couple of drugged children inside. He doesn't want this to end, but what choice does he have? Somebody knows. That couldn't be any more obvious. But what isn't obvious is who. He opens the closet door in the hallway. Jackets hang on hooks and shoes litter the floor. He scoops the shoes out, then lifts away the carpet and removes the baseboards. It always takes a little time, and in the past, Lucas never minded. After all, he's done real time, and he knows the difference between having to spend 2 minutes gaining access to a room and spending 10 years being confined in one. But now it's different. Because now there is Zach Murdoch, and having Zach Murdoch in his secret room has changed everything. He hurries with his work. Once the baseboards have been slotted out, it reveals the holes in which he can slide his fingers into to pull the square piece of floor up. He lifts it and leans it against the wall. He climbs quickly down the ladder. There is no time to hesitate. The boy is still drugged from earlier. He is wearing a yellow t-shirt with a picture of a bus on it. Lucas used to wear a similar one when he was that age. He can remember his mum giving it to him for Christmas 1 year and his dad tearing it off him the next. He's going to miss this boy. He's going to miss seeing him in the clothes that remind Lucas of his childhood. He's going to miss giving him a better life than he had growing up. Limp, the boy is too light to be any real difficulty to carry up the ladder. He puts the floor back into place, and the baseboards, and the carpet, and then the shoes. It's all taking too much time. He carries the boy quickly to the car in the garage. He squeezes him into the trunk. If there were room for both boys, this would go twice as fast, but there's not, and he never anticipated having to move 2 children at the same time. He can't exactly prop one up in the front seat, and if he tried, he knows his neighbour would be the first to see. The neighbour who listens when he shouldn't be listening, and pries when he shouldn't be prying. When did a man's business become everybody else's? He adds the short-handled spade. He can hear his dad's voice rattling around in the back of his head, telling him there's no need to dig 2 separate graves, that 1 larger one will get the job done. He gets the garage door open. He reverses the car down the driveway. He glances at his neighbour's house, and his neighbour is looking out the window at him. He's on the phone. He's probably calling the police. He should have killed him months ago. He ought to.